Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Since 9/11, this is every American's nightmare.
People were screaming, fire, fire, and the first thing we all did is to check where the fire was. When I saw that the suspect, he was getting on fire, and I freaked, of course, and without any hesitation, I just jumped over all the seats, and because I was thinking he's trying to blow up the plane.
That's the man who leapt on top of Omar Farouk Abdulmutallab on the Northwest Airlines flight over the weekend. But was Abdulmutallab connected to al-Qaeda? And what would turn this college-educated child of wealthy parents into a suicide bomber? More questions than answers on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. It's Monday, December 28th. John Hockenberry is away until next week. President Obama has ordered a review of two major aspects of the airline security system, the creation of watch lists and the use of detection equipment at airports. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs says the major question is
why an individual with the chemical explosive that he had on him could get onto an airliner in Amsterdam and fly into this country. So a listing review and a detection capabilities review so that we can look going forward about what has happened now in the past.
You can expect to see security changes at the airport in the weeks ahead, longer, more extensive searches at checkpoints, and more limited passenger movement while the plane is in the air. As for the attempted bomber, Omar Farouk Abdulmutallab, federal marshals have transferred him from a Detroit hospital to a prison where he faces terrorism charges. More details on his background are emerging this morning. We're joined now by Ahmed Idris, BBC reporter in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning, Ahmed.
Morning.
Who is Omar Farouk Abdulmutallab?
Well, Omar Farouk Abdulmutallab comes from a large, respectable family in northern Nigeria. He's a son of a wealthy retired banker in Nigeria here. He attended his high school in Lomé and is described as an A student in that institution. And he is fondly called the Pope because of his religious beliefs and his devotion to religion, actually. That's why he's being referred to as the Pope. After his high school in Lomé, he proceeded to England, where he studied engineering at the University College in London before he started an Arabic course in London and then decided to move on to Yemen.
Well, we're going to talk to you, Ahmed Idris, a little bit more about the alleged bomber. We'll be back with you in just a moment for more details. The terror incident was on Christmas Day, but there was a second scare on the same flight into Detroit yesterday. This time, a Nigerian passenger refused to come out of the bathroom for more than an hour. Passengers grew concerned, and FBI agents swarmed the plane when it landed. Turns out he had food poisoning. This Detroit airport spokesman says passengers have to be aware of the current security climate.
Even if you're sick, you have to respond to what the crew is asking you, and you have to realize that people are going to be very cautious and airline officials are going to be very cautious.
Another scare on a flight bound for Phoenix also turned out to be nothing. In Iran, a day after police officers opened fire into a crowd of protesters, killing anywhere from 8 to 15 people, there are reports of further clashes this morning on the streets of Tehran. Iranian security forces also stormed a series of opposition offices today, rounding up prominent anti-government activists in a new crackdown against the country's reformist movement. And here at home, retailers received a holiday gift this year. Newly released numbers show sales were up 3.5%. Online spending was up more than 15%. In the market, Asian markets ended mixed. The European trading is up and Wall Street futures up as well. The Dow will start at 10,520, the S&P at 1,126, and the NASDAQ is going to open up at 2,285. So we're getting more details this morning about the failed attempt to blow up an airplane over Detroit, Michigan on Christmas Day. And we're asking you, do you feel safe when you're on a plane? If you don't, especially in light of what happened last week, what would make you feel safer once you stepped onto the tarmac? Let us know at 8778-MYTAKE or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. We're going to talk more about the foiled Christmas terror attack with New York Times Scott Shane in just a few moments.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning. Over the weekend, federal authorities charged a 23-year-old Nigerian man with attempting to blow up a Detroit-bound airliner on Christmas Day. That man, Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, says he got the chemicals from a bomb expert that had ties to Al-Qaeda. We're joined again by Ahmed Idris, BBC reporter from Abuja, Nigeria, and we can get a little bit more details about Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab. You've spoken with his family. What are they saying about the incident?
Well, by the way, the family issued a statement this morning, which is the first official statement from the family on this case, where they said from very early childhood, Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab got the best parental monitoring they could ever give. And he had never shown any attitude, conduct or association that would give concern to them or any other person, except the fact that when Umar Farouk reported to them that he was abandoning his master's degree program in Dubai to go to Yemen for 7 years of Arabic study, that was when they started, when the alarm bell started ringing in their heads. And immediately the father reported to the U.S. Embassy in Nigeria, the Nigerian intelligence community, and the Saudi Arabian authorities.
Clearly, there must have been something going on that made them suspect that perhaps his, by all reports, very strict religious views had become perhaps excessive, that made them call the U.S. Embassy when he said he was going to Yemen.
Exactly. Umar, at one point, while in Yemen, before he went to Yemen, and while there, he told them that, look, I don't need your money to pursue my education in Yemen because the education is free. And the father asked him, if you're going to stay in Yemen for 7 years, by then I'm sure your passport must have expired. Then he told the father that, look, even if the passport expired, I'm definitely going to get a Yemeni passport and I can live with it.
Okay.
And he wanted them to cut ties with him.
Huh. That's Ahmed Idris, BBC reporter from joins us from Abuja, Nigeria. We're also joined by Scott Shane, Washington reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
So at that point, when his father spoke with the U.S. Embassy, walk us through what happened after that. Umar's father phoned the American Embassy in Abuja in October.
Yes, exactly. In October, he calls and expresses, I'm told, three things. That his son, he believes, has been radicalized, that he may have been in Yemen or he may be in Yemen, and that, in fact, he's missing. They don't know exactly where he is, and they have concerns about him. And this is sort of an extraordinary thing, to take concerns like this outside the family and to the United States Embassy. What they did was they shared the information within the embassy, where there are representatives of FBI, CIA, Department of Homeland Security, and so on. Then they passed the information on to Washington, where it went into a very large database of 500,000 people who have popped up in one way or another with some suspicious ties or connections, but nothing really solid. And it did not go from that database of 500,000 people to the much smaller databases that require extra screening on flights, or the 4,000 people who are on the no-fly list. They explain that in part because, obviously, one phone call with no corroborating evidence from any other source and from a family member, it can be something quite alarming, but it also can be, a family dispute or a grudge or rumor or gossip, and they don't want to necessarily interfere with someone's life by preventing them from traveling based on one phone call. So what they had done was actually mark this gentleman's file so that if he ever applied for a visa again, they said, let's do a full investigation. But they didn't pull his existing visa, which allowed him to travel the United States through June of 2010.
How does this differ from the story of the five Muslims from suburban Virginia who, in fact, there was a large investigation and they were followed into Pakistan? Was there something different from what Umar's father told the U.S. Embassy and what the families of those five men told American authorities that made them take more notice of the five men from Virginia?
Well, I think in that case, the fact that these five were Americans and that they had all disappeared together that indicated some kind of coordinated plot or scheme. In this case, and again, they were Americans, so they could travel freely back in the United States. In this case, you had a guy who was Nigerian, and no one knew where he was. That, you know, there was no reason to believe, there was no evidence that he was in the United States at that point, and of course he wasn't. So we sort of, with hindsight, we look back at this and focus on this one case. Of course, you know, you have to think about how many calls were made to U.S. embassies around the world by family members expressing concern about one person in their family, and of course, so this goes a little bit into the pile of business to think about maybe down the road if more information comes up.
Ahmed Idris from Abuja, Nigeria, can you tell us a little bit about people who may have known him from his master's degree program in Dubai? Have we learned anything about what transformed him to make him want to leave that program and go to Yemen for, I guess, reportedly Al-Qaeda training?
Well, nothing much. However, I think the issue started when he started his Arabic program in London. This is not confirmed yet, but again, when he started telling his parents that he wanted to leave for an Arab country to pursue an Arabic education, and the parents thought the ideal thing is to take him to Dubai, which is absolutely not on terrorism calendar or whatever. But then they felt that Dubai, being a cosmopolitan city or a country, they feel Umar can get the best education there for his business management, and then again acquire some Arabic as well. But then he said, towards the end of that course, he said, I'm no longer interested in this course. I'm going to Yemen, and I'm going there for 7 years. I think probably if there is some radicalization, it must have started earlier before he left for Yemen.
Okay, that's Ahmed Idris, a BBC reporter, joining us from Abuja, Nigeria. Last question for you, Scott. What happens now? He has left the hospital. Where does he go?
Well, he's gone to a prison, and, you know, this is a criminal case, and he has a lawyer now, and he'll prepare for trial down the road. And the larger picture of what happens is that President Obama has, of course, now ordered a review of both the physical screening at checkpoints and the watch listing to understand what went wrong here and whether this kind of episode could be prevented in the future.
Well, the Richard Reid, the shoe bomber, made us all now remove our shoes. We'll have to wonder what is going to change in the security lines in light of this particular one. Thanks. Scott Shane is a reporter with our partner, The New York Times. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Amy Eddings is here with a look at some of the top stories.
Hi, Celeste. The family of the Nigerian man who tried to blow up a Delta Airlines jet 3 days ago says the news of his actions was quite shocking. In its first formal statement, the family says Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab stopped talking to them when he went to England to study. The family says Abdulmutallab's father, a Nigerian banker, approached U.S. embassy officials 2 months ago to express concern about his son's increasingly radical religious views. Back in the U.S., Abdulmutallab has been released from a Michigan hospital and is being held in a federal detention center. Investigators say he had stitched a plastic explosive known as PETN into his underwear. It was a chemical that was used by convicted shoe bomber Richard Reid. Security experts say airport puffer machines that blow air on passengers would have probably detected the powder. The machines are not in wide use at airports. Lawmakers have a New Year's resolution before them when they return to the Capitol next month, merging two different health care bills. The big sticking point, what to do about a government-run health insurance program. The House is the public option. The Senate does not. Senate moderates say they won't vote for a bill that adds it.
Thanks, Amy. That's a look at some of the stories we're watching this morning. Coming up, the Kindle. More Kindle books sold on Amazon than real books this Christmas. What does that mean?
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.